Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, your host. As always, remember to subscribe, rate, and review. 5-star reviews only. We're joined by my co-host, Matt. Just got back from running errands with her mom. So, Matt, glad you made it.
Me too. Yeah, I ran a little bit late, but here now and ready to go.
Yeah, just watching the... that's what I mean, because I'm watching the Raptors Magic game. While I was waiting for Matt, and I still have that on. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. We're going to do which teams that lost game one should be in panic mode the most. So a little NBA playoff panic mode rankings. Talk about maybe the Boston Marathon as well. But, Matt, we have to start with Tiger Woods winning the Masters. And I guess I don't know. Where do you want to start with that? There's a lot to go on. Where do you want to start with Tiger Woods winning?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, well, let's start with this. I will say that I kind of feel like I expected Tiger to win. Last year, I remember we were talking about Tiger kind of being back and starting to play good. And I remember I said that I thought that he would win at least one more. I felt his upward trajectory was taking him that way. And that I thought because, you know, the Masters is probably where he plays the best or where he's had the most success, I thought that it was going to be the Masters. I thought that was going to be last year, though. He did not win last year, and that kind of, you know, made me think, all right, well, if it didn't happen then, it's not going to happen at all. So did you think that he was going to end up winning another major? Where were you on that?
I did not. I haven't thought he would win a major since, like, at 2012 or something like that. And right. Just because, like, I know he's been playing better, but, like, literally he couldn't finish courses. He couldn't finish rounds sometimes because the back pain was so bad he could barely walk. Yeah. On top of, you know, the poor play and everything going on, like, I just thought, like, he was, you know, physically done, which is why I didn't think he'd win another major.
Yeah, no, it felt like he was never going to play professional golf again for like a good 3-4 year span. That's how far out that he was, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah, so I mean, it's cool that he won. I tweeted this out, but I did have an issue with everybody who pulled up either like videos or like tweets from people. I didn't tweet this. Like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't bother me personally, but like of like sports media people who are pretty big, and they'd say, like, oh, like, Tiger's not going to win another major, or, like, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, they had legit reason to think that. Like, if you can't even walk, it's hard to think you'll win a major. So that's what makes the story so incredible as well, is that despite all that he won, it's not just the gap or anything like that. Like, part of why it's so incredible that he won is because of everything he had to overcome. So that's cool, but it's not like it was that bad or hot of a take to think he would never win again.
Right, yeah, no, it's not like it was just like a few haters, you know, it's everybody. I think even, you know, the people retweeting those probably thought that he was never going to win, particularly in that 2014-2016 time when he just wasn't playing.
Yeah, seriously. So, yeah. Congrats to Tiger. Really cool story. The thing about Tiger I remember that's really cool about him, and me and you are not like huge golf fans, obviously. But I think it was my sophomore year of high school. I was at football camp, and normally at football camp after practice, we'd watch the NBA finals because that was going on at the same time. I remember it was when like Kobe was playing the Magic or like the Celtics Lakers. Like, it was around that time. And one year it was the U.S. Open when Tiger was playing Rocco Media, and it was like 90. It went like 91 holes or something like that. And all of us, like every player at the camp, was just like glued to the TV. I don't remember how we were watching this because it must have been during a practice or something. But literally all of our whole football team, like every player who was at that football camp, was just glued to the TV. And we went to a poor high school in Salt Lake City. So it's not like it was like a rich, preppy white school. Like, there were a bunch of, you know, like people like myself or minorities who just don't golf or don't watch golf at all. And all of us were just fascinated and either cheering for or against Tiger. But like, that's one thing that Tiger does more than anyone in golf is get people to watch, which is, I think the coolest thing about him, like, that's just my memory when people talk about, like, Tiger, his ability to draw people to the sport. That's what I think of, that football camp, I think, sophomore year or whatever that was.
Right. So now here's my question, because I think you're right. That is the interesting thing about Tiger. So my question with this Masters win is Tiger back? You know what I mean? Like, obviously he can win a major, but is Tiger Woods Tiger Woods that's going to bring people to the TV again?
I think in that sense, I think we saw, like, how high the Masters ratings were for this weekend. I don't think he's back in the sense of best golfer in the world or what he was, like, how dominant he was before. But the Masters rating were, like, the best they've been in years. So I think in that sense, that part of him is back.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'd kind of say no, because I'm not particularly excited about seeing him win. Like, I'm not against it or anything. The thing that does interest me, though, and the thing that would get me to watch a U.S. Open or a British Open is if he can get Jack Nicklaus. If he can get – it's three more to tie, four more to pass. I think, obviously, the fact that he's come back to win the Masters is incredible. But if he were able to do that, that, I think, would be, you know, one of the top three most impressive things we've ever seen in sports.
So that's our Tiger talk, our little bit of golf we'll talk about on the year. Golf analyst Kyle Kopier wanted to join us but was unable to, so RIP to Kyle. Really quick, before we get into the NBA, Matt, Notre Dame burning down. That was kind of a bummer. You saw the video of that, I'm assuming?
I did see the video of that. That is, you know, obviously a bummer. It's crazy, like, that is a lot of, you know, real genuine sadness for a building, you know, and I don't think that we'd see, I think, you know, like the Vatican might be the only building in the world that I think would get that much of an outpouring. You know what I mean? So that it's pretty crazy. It's a bummer. Like, you know, all the artifacts and stuff that's in there, obviously it's a stone building. So we keep maybe the most of the thing and, you know, the spire's a bummer, but they can rebuild a lot of that. But I feel like, you know, the stained glass windows, you know, a lot of the artifacts inside, I think that is the stuff that I think is really disappointing.
Yeah. I'm interested to see like how it got started. So I just want to mention that real quick, but let's talk basketball. So here's what we're going to do. So I ranked the eight playoff series from the team that lost game one in order of most panic to least panic, or we can do the other way around. Some like two game twos have been played, the Brooklyn series and then the Golden State LA. LA had a huge comeback last night. So I didn't factor that into these rankings. I was trying to just go as much game one as possible. So do you want to start with most panic, Matt, or least panic?
Let's do most. Let's do most.
Okay, so start with most panic, and then I'll go my list. You can tell me what you think about the series. So the team that should be in the most panic mode right now, basically have their bags packed already for their vacation, is the Detroit Pistons. They're playing the Milwaukee Bucks, down 0-1. And the reason they're number one is because Blake Griffin's going to miss the series. I thought with Blake Griffin, they could get one or two games. Two would be a stretch, but I thought they could do it if Milwaukee had an off night or whatever like that. But without Blake Griffin, there's no chance in the world that they're going to beat the Bucks.
Yeah. No, I think one game tops is what I would say.
Yeah, and I've said that because I like Blake Griffin. I thought he would do well in the series, not necessarily win or anything, but I thought he'd do well in the series. So I'm bummed he's hurt.
I know, yeah, me too. Like, Blake Griffin is the best player in the NBA that I consistently forget about. You know, I never, when we're talking about the best players in the NBA, I never think of Blake Griffin, and then I watch him play, and it's like, oh, holy crap, he's really, really good at basketball.
Yeah, so the combination of his lack of playoff success in LA and playing in Detroit now, I think really factors into that.
I know, it is a bummer. He should be. Yeah, and it's weird, because, like, when he came in, you know, he had all the dunks. And, you know, he's a little bit less athletic now with the injuries that he's had, but he's, you know, still pretty athletic and does some crazy stuff. And, you know, he's still certainly an efficient player. But, yeah, you're right. Just kind of the markets and the label that the Clippers have, which has been kind of a bummer. And so it's hard. It's probably going to be hard for me to watch that series, honestly, without Blake Griffin, just because there's only one team worth watching, you know? And that's, you know, that team has Giannis. So that's certainly one thing that would bring me over. But I just think with all the other games that that's not one at the top of my list.
Yeah, and it's a bummer because with Blake, I think even though it's Milwaukee was going to be a heavy favorite to win, it's still one of the more intriguing series just viewing-wise with Blake in
there. Right.
So team number two on the panic mode scale. And again, remember, this is only counting game one. Even with game two, though, I still put him here, is the LA Clippers. So after game one, or in game two, they had that huge comeback coming down from, I think it was 31 points to beat Golden State. So the series is tied 1-1. Even with that, though, like, especially after game one, but even if we take game two into account, there's no real way they win the series.
Not really. I mean, it is interesting, you know, with no DeMarcus Cousins, what Montrezl Harrell will be able to do. Not enough, obviously. It's weird because you call it a panic list, so I don't know if the Clippers, you know, should totally be panicking, just because I feel like they're kind of playing with house money. They weren't really supposed to be in the playoffs anyway, so obviously they'd like to win, but I don't think they're going to be particularly disappointed with losing, particularly now that they've stolen a game. I feel like the goal for them, you know, kind of had to be avoid the sweep, or at least the realistic goal that the fans might have had. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, Kevin Durant got kicked out of one game. He got fouled out of another game. So I think, you know, there's a scenario, not where I think the Clippers win, you know, but if KD, you know, picks up a few more technical fouls, gets too frustrated, Montrez is able to, you know, do a lot of good work being, you know, the best big man in this series, that they could take this to six or seven games, I think.
Yeah, I think six. I think seven is a stretch, but, you know, there is a scenario where that happens. I think six would be a realistic surprise for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think, you know, if I'm looking at the most attractive free agent destinations, I know a lot of people are talking about New York and the Lakers, but it's got to be the Clippers and the Nets, right?
Yeah, well, Clippers, you look at, you know, salary cap, draft picks, things like that. Nets, you got a legit star, not superstar, but I think D'Angelo Russell's become a legit star. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely see that. My thing with the Clippers, Matt, is, you know, they made the eight seed. They made the playoffs, got the eight seed. Because of that, they gave up their first-round pick. If they would have been in the lottery, they would have kept their first-round pick. So I view it as they gave up their first-round pick to lose to the Warriors.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think that's worth it. Even with the Tobias Harris trade, and obviously, like, tanking is annoying, but it also is functional. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it is, you know, and I kind of think that the Tobias Harris trade, I think it was a good trade because I think, you know, there was a good chance he wasn't going to come back next season, or they didn't want to pay him a max contract, which is probably smart considering the guys that they could get. You know, Landry Shamet's pretty good. They got that Miami Heat pick out of it. And then, you know, it looked like it was going to allow them to miss the playoffs, because I think it's not really in Steve Ballmer's DNA to lose on purpose, and I don't think, you know, that's something that you want to do with your team. I think that's a bad way to tank. But I think if you take away players, you know, then that's an okay way to do it. And I think that's what they wanted to do. I just think that, you know, it's not so much they're doing as just the implosion of the Lakers and the Kings. You know, they didn't quite implode as much, but they definitely fizzled out from what they were doing at the beginning of the season. So I think they kind of wanted to tank. It just didn't work out because everybody else around them just sort of fell apart.
Yeah, it did have a lot to do with the Kings falling off. And I think the Tobias Harris trade was a good trade. I thought it was the right thing for the Clippers to do for all the reasons you mentioned. And one of the benefits of the trade, I was counting that first-round pick as an asset in that trade just because, oh, like, they're – and I guess kudos to them. You got to give them credit for still fighting and actually making the playoffs. But, I mean, it is kind of ironic that they're basically, I view it, trading the first-round pick for getting – killed by the Warriors. And maybe I'm wrong, it'll be a close series, but I still think it'll be Warriors in five, maybe six, if something weird happens in LA.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. if the Clippers could pull it off, I would be a huge fan of that as a Jazz fan. So I'm pulling for the Clippers.
Well, that Clippers fan right now. That brings us to our next team, Matt. If I'm a Utah Jazz fan, which I actually am, I have zero hope. Like, the only reason they're not higher than the Clippers is because the Warriors are maybe the best team in NBA history. But right. Houston just matches up so well with Utah. They make Gobert uncomfortable. James Harden, as much as I hate watching him, he does everything well scoring-wise. The way they space the floor and the way D'Antoni runs his offense is hard for Utah. When Houston's on defense, Utah's on offense, they frustrate Mitchell. Game one, it was impossible for him to really do anything. He still had an okay shooting night and ended with a decent scoring line, but he just looked frustrated the whole night. Kyle Korver's out, which is the Jazz got him for Houston for this scenario. And I just can't come away from game one being anything but frustrated and hopeless as a Jazz fan.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as a Jazz fan, what you do look at that would make you feel good is just that that was a terrible defensive scheme. It's not going to work. And, you know, Quinn Snyder's a smart enough coach to recognize that. And now they're going to come back and try something different. So I think, you know, that would be the glimmer of hope. I just think, you know, what was going to be hard going into this series, I think, was missing Dante Exum. You know, Kyle Korver, obviously, that, you know, definitely hurts. We don't know how healthy Ricky Rubio is. But Dante Exum is the best defense that I've seen played on James Harden. You know, just because of how long he is, how quick he is. He did a pretty good job of not fouling him. And so, you know, the Jazz, you know, what they tried to do is they tried to do that Milwaukee Bucks thing where they just gave him the drive to the right so they wouldn't shoot the three-pointer. The problem was that was when Gobert came up to help on Harden that the other defenders weren't able to make the right rotations. What Exum allows you to do is Exum can just stay in front of Harden. You know, he's going to give up a few of those step backs, but he's not going to be just driving every single time. So I think they're going to shift that defensive scheme. You know, it's going to be more effective. I'm afraid without Exum, though, it's not going to be effective enough. But, you know, certainly I don't think we're going to lose by 30 points again. I think we get probably one game at home. And then, you know, we might steal game five and force a game six would be kind of what I'm thinking is going to happen.
Yeah, and remember last year, so the Houston Rockets beat the Utah Jazz in the semifinals of the NBA playoffs last year. The Rockets won pretty efficiently in game one. Utah actually won game two to go back to Salt Lake tied 1-1. Then Houston dominated the game three, won game four, and then closed it out in game five. So Houston actually won both the games in Utah last year. Before the playoffs started, I thought Houston would win at five, and I still think that. I don't think Utah's going to get swept. I think they're too good to get swept. And they split the season series 2-2 with Houston. But there's six games would be a blessing as a Utah Jazz fan from where I'm looking at it.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, shout out to Daryl Morey, because I looked at the Rockets at the beginning of the season. You know, they lost Trevor Ariza. The Carmelo Anthony replacement I didn't think was going to work out. But he's done a really good job with his midseason acquisitions, you know, bringing Austin Rivers in. Kenneth Faried is a guy that he brought in who did really well against the Jazz. So, yeah, they, I think, have turned it around just as far as acquisitions. And I believe they've actually been the best team since the All-Star break. So, you know, shout out to Daryl Morey, who's done a really, really good job.
Yeah, record-wise and advanced metric-wise as well, Utah and Houston are actually the top two teams since February 1st in the league. I think some of that with Utah has to do with their schedule. They had a pretty soft schedule, but still, by every metric, they're the best two teams in the league. So it's not like I think Utah's a bad team. I just think Houston's the worst possible matchup for them.
I know, yeah. Just the way, you know, it really looked like we were going to get Portland in the first round and Denver in the second round. And that was, you know, a real path to conference finals, I thought. So, bummer that worked out this way, but, you know, that's just the way that goes sometimes.
Yeah. Next team that lost game one that I have on the panic mode, coming in at number four, The Indiana Pacers, Matt, and then some of this when you said the Clippers, like, it's not panic if it's what you expect, is why they're a little, they're four, so middle of the pack. They just couldn't score against Boston, who has a volatile defense, we'll say. You know, Marcus Smart isn't out there. I think Indiana finished with 70-something points the whole game. They went like 9 minutes without scoring in the third quarter because they were actually winning early on in the game. And then Boston went on a run, but a lot of that had to do with Indiana just could not score. And as I was watching the game, I was at church watching the game, also getting my worship on. But I was just frustrating, like, as a neutral person not cheering for either team. It was just like, how can Indiana not do anything against this Boston defense without Marcus Smart?
Right. Well, they still have Al Horford. And you know me, I'm a big Al Horford fan. I think he's great, great defender. He, with Blake Griffin, who I mentioned earlier, is in that, you know, supremely underrated category of NBA players. So that helps. The other thing with the Pacers is, you know, we've talked about it, you know, with the Jazz, you know, how you really need two guys who can get their own shot in the playoff to be successful. Minimum, probably should be three guys. The Pacers, with Victor Oladipo out, have zero. So they can do a lot of this, you know, good playmaking, share the ball, all of those types of things. But really, unless you have your Victor Oladipo type guy in, it's going to be really hard to score in the playoffs just because of how much people can prepare and game plan for you. So I just think they're in a tough spot. I think they would have really liked to keep that three seed, so they could have played the Nets, although I probably would have picked the Nets in that series. And so just, I think the talent gap is just so big, despite the fact that the Celtics have played so poorly this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, Bogdanovich is really, without Oladipo, the only guy. Wes Matthews can't really create his own shot. As good as he is at what he does, he can't really create your own shot. So it's really Bogdanovich and a bunch of role players.
Yeah.
In Indiana. And Bogdanovich, to an extent, is top-level role player, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
If I'm Indiana, I'm panicking, not because of the result of game one is surprising, but just because it kind of confirmed what I thought going into the series, just Boston was going to overwhelm Indiana with their talent, their depth, everything like that.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
And a team that you mentioned, or a series that you mentioned that could be higher on the list, because I think there's legitimate problems here, is the Philadelphia 76ers really coming in. They're at five, could be 4B. Could be higher, honestly. Could be tied with Utah. And the reason why is it has less to do with Brooklyn, which actually I really like for a lot of reasons, and more to do with Philadelphia. Joel Embiid is hurt. He's not himself. We saw that even in the game yesterday, he didn't look like himself. Ben Simmons not being able to shoot. We make fun of it a lot as a joke, but it's a legit problem that is destroying this team. You know, because, like, he's – a lot of people think, oh, if he had, like, better players around him, then, like, the offense doesn't fit. But there's no offense that fits a guard who can't shoot in the NBA anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's weird. See, I would have had the 76ers at the top or one of the top couple teams just for the reason that, you know, that loss is not what they expected to happen, and then the way that game played out. And then I'd even be nervous after game two. You know, I know that they had that great third quarter that let them pull away against the Nets, but the Nets were only down by one coming into halftime. And the thing with the Sixers is you can't plan on another 51-point quarter like they had in the third quarter. Now you're going to Brooklyn, which is going to be, you know, it's their first time in the playoffs. So I know that they're not known for having the kinds of fans that Philadelphia has, but I think that's going to be a loud, difficult environment for them to play in. And, you know, they're still a young team. I know they made a deep run in the playoffs last year. But, you know, I don't know if they're experienced enough to get both of those road wins like you'd want them to now that they've dropped this first game one. So I would expect them, you know, best case scenario to go back to Philadelphia for game five with a series 2-2. And, you know, anytime that happens, I just feel like it gets dicey. So they, because they're the three seed, because of what Brooklyn can do and because of, you know, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, like you talked about, I'd probably have them one or two.
Yeah, and with Philadelphia, remember last year, Miami split the – so the Philadelphia played Miami to open the playoffs last year. And Miami split the games in Philly 1-1. Philly still ended up winning in five. So mathematically can't happen, but that's a totally different series, I think. I think, like you said, I think what's going to happen is they're going to split the games in Brooklyn, so it'll go back to Philly 2-2. And then Philadelphia, to avoid a game seven – they'd have to win in Brooklyn two out of the three games, which I don't see that happening. They'd have to either go 2-2 and then win game six and close out the series. I don't think they're going to be able to close out the series in Brooklyn if Philadelphia goes in there with a 3-2 lead. I also don't think they're going to go 2-0 against Brooklyn in Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn at least gets one. D'Angelo Russell is such a talented scorer. Brooklyn's a good team that people don't watch a lot, don't give them a lot of credit for. But Brooklyn's a legit good, not as talented as Philly. I'm not saying they're on the same level as Philly, and I still see Philly winning the series. But I see it happening in seven games. And anytime there's a game seven, you just never know.
Yeah. No, seriously. And, yeah, and, you know, that's why I think that should be a top free agent destination. Like, can you imagine, like, Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant on that team? Or actually, aren't they going to have two max slots this summer, or is it just going to be one?
I'd have to check, honestly. I know it's in that range, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, because if they added, like, let's say they added Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, that's two point guards. That's not the exact situation you would want. But that's, you know, that's probably the top team in the East if that happens.
So that'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be fun. Brooklyn's a fun team. I think their coach Atkinson is doing a really good job there. So that'd be fun if for somehow they pulled a quote-unquote upset, did get one of those big guys. Mm-hmm. Durant and D'Angelo Russell playing together. I know we have Durant and Curry playing together, so it wouldn't be like the exact same, but Durant playing with D'Angelo Russell would be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, next on my list, and the reason they're not – well, I'll say it. So it's the Denver Nuggets coming in at number six in the panic meter, and the reason they're not higher is because – you know, San Antonio's a good team. Denver's a good team as well, though. It wasn't expected to be a sweep. Losing game one is important, but it's not a series-crushing defeat with the way Denver is set up right now. The reason it's not lower, though, the reason that's 7 or 8, is because San Antonio did some things in game one that exploited Denver, exploited Nikola Jokic, and really highlighted San Antonio's ability, I guess, how they match up well with Denver. They did shoot really well, where Denver shot poorly. So I think that's the good takeaway for Denver. San Antonio is not going to shoot as well as they did, most likely, where Denver's not going to shoot as poorly. But there's still some matchup things that Popovich did, especially with Nikola Jokic, sagging off him, double-teaming him, crashing the double team hard on Jokic. Things like that, especially when Jakob Poeltl was on the floor. That I think matchup-wise, even though Denver's more talented, I think San Antonio can drag this out into a 6 or 7-game series.
Yeah. No, they're another team that I would have, you know, more concerned, just because losing home games is, I feel like, how you end up is how you lose a playoff series. That's why I would have the Jazz lower, because it's still a road game. So, you know, you need to win one or two road games. So losing one or two is okay. But the home games you don't want to drop. And, you know, I know that the Nuggets are going to be able to adjust and stuff, but I just feel like Popovich is a better coach than Mike Malone. Not that Mike Malone's a bad coach, it's just Popovich is a better coach than everybody. So I think that they're still going to be able to exploit a lot of those things. Even if it's not, you know, those same things or to the same extent, I think there's going to be other things that pop up. And then... ooh, geez. Do you see the score of the Spurs Nuggets game right now?
No, I'm watching the Raptors game. What's the score of it?
It's Spurs 41, Nuggets 23 in the second quarter.
Oh, well, maybe you should put them
on. So that is cause for concern for the Nuggets.
If Denver goes down 0-2 on the road, during their home games, then they jump up a lot. I didn't think I thought they'd come out strong game one. You know, after losing game one at home, I thought they'd come out fired up, come out with a better game plan, be more crisp, and the opposite of what's actually happening is what I thought would happen.
Yeah, no, I definitely had the Nuggets winning game two. And you, like you said at the beginning, your list was only including the game ones. It wasn't including this game two that's happened as we've been recording, obviously.
Yeah, well, do you have any more comments on the Spurs Nuggets?
Do not, just that I'm definitely picking the Spurs might sweep, which I think would be interesting, but anyway.
That'd be fun. So number seven on my list is the Oklahoma City Thunder, lost game one in Portland. And the reason I'm not panicking is because Oklahoma City is a really good team, but so is Portland. This was always going to be a six or seven game series. And kind of what you said regarding Denver, like when we were talking about the Denver series, it's, you're going to lose a couple games on the road, and that doesn't affect the series or really anything. It's, you're still in great shape if you're Oklahoma City. You want to win game two. Game two becomes more important, but even if you lose game two, you can still go back home and tie the series up 2-2. So if I'm an Oklahoma City fan, I'm disappointed, but not worried at all, keeping in mind that Portland's a fantastic team, so it's not like a guarantee they get anything, but just losing game one to Portland is not an unexpected or series crushing result.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think Portland, you know, really wanted to come out and really get game one because of what happened to them last year. So I think that they were probably more motivated than any other team in the whole playoffs to get game one. Zira, I still think, you know, Oklahoma City probably has more talent. Portland still has Cantor, who I know had a good offensive game. I just feel like they're going to really be able to exploit him. And if they don't, and if they're not able to exploit him more, then particularly because Billy Donovan coached him and knows what he can't do, then I think that would be a real, really indicative of how good or bad of a coach Billy Donovan is.
Yeah. And I think this another series is going to go to six or seven. Dame, like, these are four of the best players in the whole playoffs. Like, between Westbrook and George and Lillard and McCollum, those are two of the best, like, 1-2 combos in the playoffs. So that's one of my favorite series to watch. I think it's going to go six or seven. I think Oklahoma City is going to win. That's who I picked. But I'm not going to be surprised if Portland wins at all. This is one of those series where I just kind of sit back, eat some popcorn, and enjoy what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is the ideal series to watch just because I think it's going to be closer than any of the other ones. So,
and last team on my list, the team that shouldn't be panicking at all, is the Toronto Raptors, because everything I said about, you know, losing game one not being that important, let me take that back. The reason I'm not worried if I'm Toronto is because they're so much better than Orlando. Orlando shot 48% from three in game one. You can't really bank on that happening again. Kyle Lowry did not score. You can't bank on that not happening again. The pause for concern for Toronto is that they always lose game one. There's so many game ones they lose. And last year, they won game one, but then the year after they get Kawhi, they come back and lose game one again. So that's the one area where if I'm Toronto, it's like I am bummed out. But there's so many things that went wrong for them, that went right for Orlando, that aren't going to happen again. I think this is the most especially if you like don't count the Blake Griffin injury, I think this is the most mismatched series in the playoffs. And I think I think Toronto's just going to win the next four in a row. Wouldn't be shocked if it goes to six if Orlando gets one of the home games. But if I'm a Raptors fan, I'm bummed that the series is going to last a little longer, so they won't have as much rest before Philadelphia or Brooklyn.
Yeah. I would say the panic meter is low as far as the series goes. I think the panic meter should be high as far as the playoffs go, because, like you said, they've had a history of losing game ones. You're hoping it's a different team because they got a new coach, although it was an assistant under Dwayne Casey. You've got Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, I just feel like if you lose game one, that's definitely going to be in your mind when you go into this next series, where it looks like you're going to be playing who are you going to be playing? The Sixers, right? Or the Nets. And even the Nets, you know, if the Nets ended up winning that series, I think they have the tools where they could give the Raptors the problems, although I would still probably pick the Raptors. Really, it's so weird. I really like the Raptors. I think they're a really talented team, and they do some really nice things. It's just hard to pick them in the playoffs because they've burned me so many times before.
Yeah, no, and I'd like you said, I'd be worried. I guess it makes sense, and I agree with what you said about playoff-wise, like losing game one's a bad sign to Orlando. Nick Nurse is a first-year coach, which is never a fantastic thing in the playoffs, but I still lean with Kawhi, who win shares-wise all-time in the playoffs, he's number three since they started tracking that metric. So
yeah.
I think Toronto's going to be absolutely fine in this series. I think it's cool for Orlando that they won a game, especially it's their first playoff series in 7 years. But not going to happen. Toronto's going to win. Like, that didn't – when I was watching that game in my pool, because Arizona has the best weather in the world, and I didn't even – like, oh, Raptors are fine. Didn't panic at all. Whereas other games, like, I was like, oh, they lost that. It was the Sixers, because the Sixers played right before. When the Sixers lost, I was like, that is terrible. That is bad. This, like, all those reasons we talked about. When Toronto lost, like, it's fine. That's not going to be a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And that is our playoff panic meter. That took about half an hour, which is what we kind of thought it would. We thought that'd be most of the show. So we covered all the playoff series after game one. Again, some game twos have happened or are going on right now. So next week, I think some of round one will be wrapping up. So I'm sure we'll talk about that. Before we go, Matt's favorite day of the year happened yesterday, Patriots Day in Boston. Matt, do you want to give us a quick recap of that, and then we'll call it a show?
Yeah, so the highlights for that show, or for that race, less interesting. I thought they were more interesting in the push-rim wheelchair races. We had a couple of guys who the typical winners who have won year after year after year lost. The typical winner for the men's push-rim is a guy named Marcel Hug from Switzerland. I'm sure I pronounced his name wrong.
And this is the Boston Marathon we're talking about.
Yes, Boston Marathon for the, because they have a wheelchair, the wheelchair race and the able-bodied race.
Right. No, so, yeah. I don't think I mentioned it was the Boston Marathon. I just want to clarify that.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So, but yeah, we had an American win the men's push from a guy named Daniel Romanchuk, it looks like. And in the women's race, we have an American who's won for 4 or 5 years or so. She came in second this year to a woman from Switzerland, Manuela Schaar. So those were the ones that we had the upsets that I think were a little bit more interesting. As far as the able-bodied race, we had a Kenyan win, Lawrence Cherono. He beat Lalisa De Sisa in a sprint that came down. He only beat him by 2 seconds. Lalisa De Sisa, he probably saw that he wasn't going to win, but he just kind of gave up the last 10 yards or so, which was kind of a bummer. I thought it was going to be, you know, sort of a dive to the finish line. But Lalisa De Sisa, he's a really good runner. He's won lots of marathons before. I believe the Boston he's won before. But the men's, as far as the U.S. goes, we had a guy named Scott Faubel and then Jared Ward, who went to BYU, where we went to school. They both ran 2:09 marathons. Their personal best before that were 2 hours and 12 minutes. So big PRs for them. I think that looks really good, particularly for Jared going into the Olympics. I think that's really going to help him and makes him a contender for a medal. And then the women's race, an Ethiopian woman, Worknesh Degefa. She led, you guys probably aren't going to remember this, but in Beijing, there was, I believe, a woman from Romania, and she just led for like 20 miles by herself. It was that type of a race. Degefa led by herself for about 22 miles. Highest finishing American was Jordan Hasse, and she ran a 2:25. Which is a very respectable time. So that's my Boston Marathon thing.
Yeah, Matt literally will wake up early and watch that. And it's mind-blowing to me. I like watching track and stuff, but watching a marathon And it's impressive. Like, they don't get enough credit for how fast, like, marathon runners go. So, like, I'm not saying anything about that. It's just, for me, it's so boring to actually watch the thing, you know?
I understand why everybody thinks that except me. But I think it's so interesting just to watch the pacing and when people make the moves, their moves and all that sort of thing.
Well, people do listen to the show for marathon content, so appreciate you being able to chime in on that.
Yeah, happy to help.
Yeah, thank you for Matt. Thank you for everybody listening. Again, Double Take with Matt and Jake is on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom. 5-star review only. Happy for Tiger. Happy the NBA playoffs are underway, and we'll talk to you all next week.